This is Blue Dreaming, reading Müde bin ich, geh zurück. Also written by Blue Dreaming. This was originally written, I think, back in 2015. I'm not sure for what. And I do not recall writing this at all. I'm recording it for the prompt chill for Potoween 2024. This story is rated PG. The focus is Yixing centric, with the point of view being young me. The summary is, there's something strange about the street outside at 3 in the morning. The warnings are mentions of murder and serial killings. The note? The author's note is, this is for the fairies. I do not recall what I meant when I wrote that note, so your guess is as good as mine. I also have a note that the title is from the classic German lullaby, and that the soundtrack for the film Cracks accompanies this story quite well. I'm recording this outside at about 20:32. It is about 12 degrees Celsius, a little cold, but the wind has died down compared to other nights, so hopefully it won't be quite as noisy. I won't be editing this, except I will be pausing if an airplane comes over, since I noticed that airplanes make a very loud sound. I may or may not try adding some music to it. We'll see. I also reviewed pronunciation but ahead of time, but I'm not super great at it, and I'll probably slip as we go along, so just doing my best. There's something strange about the street outside at 3 in the morning, a time when everyone should be sleeping, when all the children are tucked in their beds, after the Sandman has come, promising them sweet dreams to make them forget the bullies at school, the homework they cried over before they went to sleep, the monsters hiding under their beds. After them troop the sad adults, heads nodding over their bottles and pills before they drag themselves away from the television screen, flickering static in the half-empty crisp bags and candy wrappers that fill them full of sweet emptiness as they drink themselves into blackness and fall into shadowed dreams. A few stubborn outliers always remain, a light here, a lamp there, a midnight snack to fill an empty tummy. But one by one, these final vestiges of humanity are snuffed, leaving the house-lined street in a restless silence, waiting and yet not expecting anything in particular, as the leaves scrape and rattle across the sidewalks in anticipation of autumn. Young me stands at the window and watches the silence, a fitful slumber squirming restlessly in her arms, blankets all a tangle in a feeble cry as she wraps the baby back up warmly and whispers, "Hush." Her husband isn't here to help. His side of the bed is cold and empty, coverlet not yet turned down. Where could he be tonight? Paris? Milan? Belgrade? Dubai? Young me has lost track, and she doesn't much care anyway. Her side of the bed is just as untouched. There's something nice, she finds, about the street after 3 in the morning. A kind of empty calm, a whisper at the back of her head. You made it this far, it tells her, the cold breath tickling over her ear, pinching the toes of the baby from where they peek out between a fold of the blanket. You can make it till dawn. There was a time, perhaps, when she tried to sleep, but those days are long past, and the one time she succumbed to her husband's email to go see a doctor, the doctor had suggested that perhaps she was suffering from postpartum depression, and also sleeping poorly because of taking care of an excessively colicky baby. still just watch that airplane roll overhead as it arcs down toward landing. Young me had promptly left the clinic. "You're exactly right," she whispers to the baby, finger running softly over a gently sloped forehead. "You're mine." And though it's true that young me is tired, she doesn't mind this restless energy that fills the dark, keeps her bones moving, bare feet gliding across the carpet. After all, it's times like these, standing at the window, the unearthly golden glow of the street light in front of the house pooling around her feet, and baby tucked into her arms, quietly fussing, that young me gets to see him. Of all the things which make up our short-time lives, sleep is surely the best. Stephen King, Insomnia. Her head was awash with white static, mirroring her muted humming as she sat in the rocking chair just tucked to the side of the window, creaking back and forth, as the baby wailed softly, not hungry, not wet, just fussing and warm in the bundle of blankets, as young me sat, eyes staring into the middle distance, the sidewalk bordering the street, a ribbon of pale concrete slab separated from the road by a strip of green grass stained black in the salt lights. She'd seen the odd wanderer before, more often a lost car or two, driving slowly back from a party or something. But he was different. There was a purpose to his walk, a firm intention in the way he laid his footsteps down the sidewalk that pulled her out of her witching hour days, eyes tracking him from left stage, where he'd enter her view, and along the sidewalk in front of her house before he turned at the house next to hers, walking down the path to the front door and disappearing from view. Young me had hummed thoughtfully, murmuring to the baby, "We haven't seen him before, have we?" The baby had quieted for a moment, staring up at her with watery black eyes, and young me had nodded, shifting the baby to her other shoulder and patting the small back carefully with one hand as she thought about the neighbor she'd not yet had occasion to meet, though she and her husband had been living in the neighborhood for over 4 years. "I'm curious," she thought, idly, and wondered if she'd see him again. After a while, tracing the path of an errant plastic bag over the immaculate lawns to where it snagged on the jutting bottom of a car chassis, trapped, she wondered what he was doing awake and on the move at this time of night. The hardest for a man is to lie to himself between 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the morning. Stephen King, Insomnia. She sees him several times after that, between the hours of 3 and 4 in the morning, not in a regular pattern, nothing set, and sometimes he carries a black bag, leather by the way the light falls over its soft creases, and sometimes his hands are empty and swing by his sides. He always wears black, though, like a shadow come to light, and a cap tucked over his head, hair carefully arranged beneath the sides, and a darkness cast over his face. The baby doesn't care about their eccentric neighbor much, fussing and wailing as usual, but young me feels something a little stronger than curiosity, but she doesn't exactly want to put a label on it, either. "Should we bake Mr. 3 in the morning some cookies and take them over?" she murmurs to the baby, standing to the side of the window and watching him walk home, arms swinging empty tonight, his shoulders straight. The baby doesn't reply, just grouses as usual. Young me doesn't mind. When the baby quiets some, usually when the sun rises, she sets to work, mixing and measuring, and soon a delightfully sweet aroma fills the kitchen and overflows into the house and the baby sleeps in the bassinet as young me cools the cookies on metal racks and arranges them carefully in a tin before slipping her keys in her pocket and stepping out the door. It's been a while, and the sun feels warm on the skin of her face as she lifts her head, tilting it towards the sun. Her first knock on the door goes unanswered, until she steps back for a moment and sees the doorbell cleverly worked into the metal trimming at the side of the door. One might almost think that Mr. 3 in the Morning doesn't want visitors. Young Mi smiles and rings the bell. The house groans loudly, and she steps back in slight consternation. But after a moment, there's a scrape, a series of clicks, and then the door opens and the mysterious man himself is peering out. "Hello, Young Mi says, and holds up the plate of cookies. The man doesn't look surprised, but his face is vaguely mask-like in the shadows of his front hallway, and she can't tell what he's thinking, or if he's even real. She keeps talking away anyway, just as though she's talking to the baby. Young Mi is good at talking to people who don't reply. "I brought some cookies as a late. I'm new to the neighborhood gift," she says, and pushes the plate towards him as he brings his hands up, perhaps reluctantly. It's hard to tell, to hold the porcelain. "My name is Young Mi, and I live next door." "Thank you," the man says, and his voice is polite, smooth in the dimness. "I'm Yi Xing." He dips his head, and Young Mi dips hers back. When she looks back up, the door is closing, and she steps back to avoid having her nose clip the wood. But she's not offended. There's something about Yi Xing that she can't quite put her finger on. Some people are like that. As she's walking back down the path to the sidewalk and up to her own front steps, she wonders what he thinks of her. But it doesn't much matter. The baby is crying, voice shrill as it echoes down the hallways, and she slips through the house to wrap the small form up in her arms and whisper lullabies, soothing the cries to muffled wails and then only the occasional hiccup. "Hey, hey, Susan Day, have you killed any kids today?" Stephen King, Insomnia. Young Mi doesn't usually turn on the television, preferring the radio when she feels the need to cut the silence. But the remote is lying on the shelf while she's dusting, and she presses the on-off switch by accident as she brushes it to one side. The announcer's voice is too loud as usual, and she's just about to switch it off when the sounds coalesce into words. "And citizens will be alarmed to hear that police have traced another disappearance to the unidentified remains discovered last night in the warehouse district, as this summer's serial murder case seems to be no closer to reaching a conclusion." There's a sharp cry from the nursery, and Young Mi's finger taps the off button of its own accord, but as she picks the baby up, cradled in her arms and rocking back and forth, she knows. And it's only a brief matter of typing a few keywords into her search engine before the dates line up. Young Mi has trouble sleeping. Or rather, sleep eludes her, slipping out into the dark between the soft cries of a fussy baby and the tingling numbness that fills her bones. But she hasn't lost touch with reality. Or perhaps it's because of her sleep-deprived state that her thoughts, dreamlike, make associations that a well-rested mind would discard as ludicrous. And we have another airplane passing by. This one higher, flying, let's see, west, I think. I wonder where it's going. We'll let it go on its way. She doesn't even doubt herself. And watching Yi Xing walk home, the hands of the clock pointing just past 3, she nods, humming to the baby in her arms. We know, don't we, dear? The baby waves small arms and says nothing at all. Young me, between lullabies, plans the lunch menu. It's a long way back to Eden, sweetheart, so don't sweat the small stuff. Stephen King, Insomnia. Now that she knows to ring the doorbell and expects the loud groaning it seems to provoke from the house, rather than the sharp clang of bells that fills her own house when a stranger rings her bell, young me isn't surprised when the door cracks open to reveal the face of a certain Yixing next-door neighbor, fellow night perambulator, and something else besides. Hello, she says, without preamble. I'd like to invite you to lunch. She waits expectantly, lips pursed, key hanging heavy in her pocket. Yixing blinks, almost cat-like, young me thinks suddenly. It's strangely appropriate. To what do I owe this pleasure? Yixing asks slowly, as though turning the invitation over in his mind and examining the pale stomach for hidden weapons. Young me shrugs. My husband travels a lot, she says, and everything is true. And I get a little lonely without some human interaction. She pauses again. Not eager. Just waiting. So I'm to take pity on you? Yixing asks finally, cocking an eyebrow. He looks both taken aback, as well as secretly delighted. Perhaps he's amused. It's hard to tell. And young me finds it doesn't much matter either way. Perhaps I'm taking pity on you, she says, in counterattack. The lone bachelor on the block. Somehow, he says, his reply just as measured. I feel that explanation is somewhat lacking in decorum and propriety. I follow my own rules, young me says, simply, and sticks her hand into her pocket, the empty one, unweighted. I shall expect you tomorrow then, she adds, tipping her head and turning away. I didn't say yes, Yixing calls after her. Young me smiles as she steps from crack to crack along the sidewalk, and doesn't say anything at all. It was life, often unsatisfying, frequently cruel, usually boring. Sometimes beautiful. Once in a while, exhilarating. Stephen King, Insomnia. The baby seems to be in agreement with a visitor, going to sleep shortly after the sun rises, darkness fading to blue before streaks of red and orange slash the sky, yellow welling out and bruises turning blue between the strokes. Young me watches the small figure sleeping in the bassinet, tiny gusts of air puffing out of a small nose and mouth, before she turns away and heads for the kitchen. It's been a while since she's cooked for anyone besides herself, and she's looking forward to it. There's something deeply satisfying about trussing the chicken, stuffing it full of onions, garlic, and herbs, rubbing it well with butter, fleur de sel, and freshly ground pepper. She takes special care with the jus, adding just the right amount of vermouth and staining the rich liquid a deep red before it simmers brown. The table is set with the silver maple set, the 25th anniversary of an aged queen, and young me only pauses, hearing the bell, to straighten the arrangement of dried flowers on the end table before she slips down the hallway to open the door. Yixing is standing there, just as she'd expected, a bottle of wine tucked in the crook of one elbow. Hello, she says, taking the extended bottle as he steps over the threshold. Thank you for having me, he replies. She nods and beckons him in towards the table, only pausing to fetch the corkscrew from the sideboard before she sits down. The lunch is already spread on the table as she opens the wine and pours them both glasses of the Merlot. Then she lifts the carving knife, aware of the way Yixing is following the path of the blade as she expertly carves the breast in careful slices, away from the bone. There's something. An electricity hanging in the air between them. As the knife splits the steaming flesh and parts the chicken into even pieces, broken only when she lays the blade down and serves Yixing first, and then herself. "Help yourself to the dark meat as well," she says, offering him a drumstick and taking the other for herself. The wine pairing may not be exactly conventional, but it complements the rich flavor of the meat and provides an interesting counterpart to the jus and potatoes. Yangmi is pleased, dabbing at her lips with a napkin. The baby will be waking soon, but there's still a moment for coffee and dessert. "Would you care for some coffee?" she asks, to be polite, though she knows the answer is already yes. Yixing nods, and Yangmi pours the chilled essence of coffee into each porcelain cup before topping it off with hot water. Contrary to what is perceived to be common knowledge concerning those who appear to have trouble sleeping, Yangmi likes a cup of coffee just as much as the next person, perhaps more so, and Yixing seems, once again, to share her tastes. "This cake is excellent," he says, the first words spoken in conversation apart from polite inquiries about salt and pepper and sugar for coffee, and Yangmi hides a small smile. "Thank you," she replies, out of habit, but also because she knows her cake is truly excellent. "Do you cook?" she asks then, on a whim. Yixing's eyes flicker, perhaps with amusement. "Something along those lines," he says. And Yangmi knows exactly what he's talking about. "I myself have always liked carving meat in particular," she says, adding, after a moment, "there's such an art to it." "There is indeed," Yixing agrees pleasantly, but his eyes narrow slightly as his gaze darts up to meet hers. He's not alarmed, merely watchful. "It's exhilarating." Yangmi smiles mildly and takes another bite of cake. "Do you get out much?" he asks, after a cup and a sip of coffee, after a pause and a sip of coffee. His cup is almost empty, and he nods when Yangmi gestures to refill it, watching the stream of coffee essence pouring into the cup, a brown so rich it's almost red as she adds the water. "I'm otherwise occupied," Yangmi says lightly, refilling her own cup in turn and setting the bottle back on the sideboard. "The baby sleeps poorly, and I've become rather well acquainted with the night." Yixing's eyes sharpen as he raises the coffee cup to his lips. "The night, you say?" His voice is light, careful. Yangmi feels oddly pleased, having managed to provoke some kind of actual reaction from him. "Yes," she says, equally lightly, taking her own sip. "We have our own little world, the night, the baby, and I." She doesn't say anything about seeing Yixing, but he must know. Yangmi thinks, perhaps, that he doesn't know how to ask. "Do you see much of interest?" he finally asks, setting down his cup, the porcelain chiming as it hits the saucer. His eyes are fixed to hers as though waiting for a lie. Yangmi, however, finds the truth is generally the more interesting animal. "It's quiet, after the children and the grown-ups sleep," she says, thinking about the Sandman and the nameless malaise that follows the adults as their lights go out. "The baby and I like to watch the way the fallen leaves dance under the salt lights." "Is it just leaves, then?" Yixing asks, too casually, and Yangmi hides a smile. "Leaves, people," she says, indifferently. "The hours between 3 in the morning and dawn are special." Yixing stares at her, and she stares back. Finally, he looks down, spearing the last morsel of cake with his fork. "I agree," he says, smiling at the plate. Yangmi smiles at the crumbs on hers. Deeper in the recesses of the house, the baby stirs. "I'm sorry," Yangmi says, gesturing down the hallway. "The baby is waking." Yixing nods in understanding, and rises from his seat. Together, they walk towards the door. "Thank you for the lovely wine," Yang Mi says, lingering in the doorway as Yi Xing steps out into the sun. "Thank you for the lovely lunch," Yi Xing replies, tipping his head. The baby begins to wail, not hungry or tired, just afraid of being forgotten. Yi Xing doesn't blink, and Yang Mi wonders idly if he can hear the baby. "See you," Yi Xing says, and turns, descending the porch steps. There's a bird in the tree. It puffs its chest and sings a trill. Yang Mi shuts the door. The baby is crying. "Hush," she hums, heading for the nursery. The end. Well, it is now 2057. I am quite cold. The wind has not picked up too much. There have been 2 or 3 airplanes and a car that went by, and perhaps a siren. And I can hear in the distance a train and its bell. It's a bit odd, sitting on the front step, right next to the window that looks out onto the street. So I'm beyond the window, on the sidewalk, so to speak. Strange in context with this story. No one has walked by. It's still pretty early, comparatively speaking. Although, reading on my screen, I do feel like I keep wanting to look out of the corners of my eye. If it was earlier in the year, we might have deer. Or rabbits. The deer sometimes, if you wake up after 3 or so, early in the morning, when it's still dark, they might be napping on the lawn. It's quite delightful, actually. Though it feels a little bit like forest spirits, too, sometimes, depending on the context. Well, this was this, and that was that, and I know I butchered the names a little bit, but hopefully it's not too bad. If you listen to this, thanks for indulging me.